IFPRI Policy Seminar, Why Poverty Persists, Poverty Dynamics in Asia and Africa, held on May 30, 2012, in Washington, D.C. Speaker Agnes Kiesenbing, Senior Research Fellow, IFPRI.
Good afternoon to everyone, and thanks for coming here. So this work was work that we did in collaboration with the Chronic Poverty Center, Bob specifically, who made several trips to Bangladesh. Our longtime collaborators in Bangladesh, Data Analysis and Technical Assistance Limited. And it basically tries to look at what happens to the lives of the poor in between two periods in time, 1996 and 97 to 2006-07, when the second survey happened. So I think as a very brief introduction, the performance of Bangladesh in terms of poverty reduction has been quite impressive in the last decade. There have been substantial improvements in the non-monetary indicators of the poorest, but there's still quite a large number of people who live below the food poverty line, and therefore reducing poverty and lifting the extreme poor out of poverty still remains a major development challenge. I like to illustrate such grand concepts like this by looking at pictures. I love to take pictures. So the left side of the slide shows pictures which were taken when we did the initial survey in 1996. This was the very first survey I did when I joined IFPRI. So it's a long time ago. And the one with a women's group shows them meeting with an extension worker. 10 years later, the NGO now has this really gorgeous conference facility. It's a place where we actually hold a lot of briefings and trainings. The fish ponds were, and still are, small backyard fish ponds, but when you return to this area in Maiminsing, we've seen that there's been a lot of expansion of polyculture fish pond cultivation. So these changes are very clear. You see NGO headquarters sprouting out everywhere. You see fish ponds. You see lots of enterprises coming out. But you also see some very subtle changes. And I remember that whenever we would go to the field in 1996, it would be very hard to do an interview because you'd have these hordes of children gathering around you. But nowadays, you don't see hordes of children gathering around you anymore because if you look at that little girl, for example, she's carrying a school book. A lot of the kids are actually in school. So if you time your interviews right, you may not have to bring as much candy as we used to in long ago. So we've also seen that some individuals have clearly been able to move out of poverty and construct nice houses like this, and others have not. So the question is, why are some people still in poverty, whereas others have not been able to move out? To answer these questions, CPRC funded IFPRI and Data to collect a second round of household surveys which had been previously done in the same sites in the 90s. So we did a follow-up survey, which was actually part of integrated qualitative and quantitative study. And these data are available at the link below. They're publicly available. And we used the data from the quantitative side of the study to estimate poverty transition categories, to look at the probabilities of being chronic poor, moving out of poverty, falling into poverty, and never being poor, analyze the determinants of belonging to a given poverty transition category, and also analyze the determinants of per capita consumption at the end line, 2006-2007, as a function of characteristics of the households and the shocks and negative events that had transpired since initial survey. We also drew on qualitative work which was undertaken prior to the survey and after the survey to enrich our interpretation of results. So we did focus groups in a subsample of about 25% of the villages. And then our collaborator, Peter Davis, went back to do life histories based on the categories of transition matrix, which we had computed once we had the new consumption figures. So what is very clear in our survey is that if you had headcount poverty of 62%, so 62% under the BBS, Bangladesh Bureau of Statistics, poverty line in 1996. By 2006-2007, this had dropped to 13%. Now, these rates are a lot lower than the nationally representative statistics because our households, these particular households are a bit wealthier. They're They were households which participated in some agricultural technology program. So they were farming households. They had land or were able to rent land. Interestingly enough, the biggest number when you look at poverty transitions that you see that 50% of the sample households had moved out of poverty. 36% were never poor, but you still have 11% who are chronically poor and about 2% who had fallen into poverty over the interim. What we found out was that initial household characteristics are really quite important in determining chronic poverty and household consumption. I'm going to present just the overview of the results here, and if you want more details, you can buy the book. There's also a working paper that's available from the CPRC website. The probability of chronic poverty is negatively associated with schooling and the value of non-land assets. Conversely, you are less likely to be chronically poor if you're better educated and if you have more non-land assets. Demographics also clearly matter. So households which have high proportions of young children and older people are also more likely to be chronically poor and more likely to have lower per capita consumption. This one should actually be called negative events. So we asked households, what were the negative events that caused you to reduce your standard of living, caused you to reduce your assets, or basically set you back over the last 10 years? And although one would think that floods would come up as a big thing on the radar screen, actually no. Although floods get a lot of attention in the international media, especially if they're the huge floods which occur once every decade or so, only slightly over 12% of households said that floods have set them back. The big hit actually comes from illness expenses. So about 19% of households reported being set back by illness expenses, plus the income losses associated with illness. Another whammy was a life cycle event of dowry and wedding expenses. So technically, they're not shocks. They're life cycle events. The moment a daughter is born, you basically have to start saving for a dowry. Death is also important, but you know, people don't. It's an event which is not it's certain, but doesn't occur that often. And then you have other shocks as well. And what we found out is that death of the main income earner and illness-related income losses have the biggest negative impact on per capita consumption. Interestingly, floods are not significant, and this is possibly because of effective emergency assistance mechanisms. It is possible that there are some flood-related illnesses, but by and large, I think most studies which look at which evaluate the impact of the emergency assistance mechanisms find they're quite effective in Bangladesh. So the double whammy occurs really when you have a combination of dowry and illness expenses. So the life histories interviews were done by Peter Davis, and we've actually found them quite useful for triangulating the poverty transitions and for understanding the drivers of consumption changes and movements into and out of poverty. And what they found was that if you have dowry expenses and illness expenses happening at the same time or shortly after each other, this really pushes households into chronic poverty. So I remember this interview very well. I think we were pretesting together, Bob, and we were looking at this household with daughters almost reaching marriageable age and this older father, and it was like, oh, this household is sitting on a time bomb. Once, you know, the dowries and an illness could really wipe them out. So what are the policy implications? Because we've seen that schooling and assets are so important, policy interventions are really needed to increase access to and improve the quality of education. And Bangladesh has already made great strides in that regard through its primary education stipend and secondary education programs. So we also need to provide the poor with opportunities to build up and trade up assets and to protect the asset base from shocks. So NGOs have been doing quite a lot of that in terms of asset transfer programs and other programs which help build up their asset base. The required protection from shocks, however, may differ from men and women. In related work, which was funded by the Basis Scripps, we found that women's assets tend to be drawn down more by illness shocks. And illness happens to be one of the more prevalent shocks and tends to be relatively uninsured. A second policy implication is then, how do we address this issue of dowries? Whenever we brought up this issue of dowry in Bangladesh, it would create a lot of controversy. So you would have half of the room saying, but dowries are what my daughter needs to have a good life and a good marriage. And then the other half of the room would equally vociferously say, but you have to abolish them because they're oppressive. So it's a very controversial issue in Bangladesh. Worldwide, dowries have tended to decline or to disappear as a practice as investments in girls' human capital increase and as labor market opportunities reward investments in girls' human capital. The question is, can we wait for that to happen? Big question. A less controversial issue it would be to provide instruments to cope with illness, and NGOs are already starting to experiment on that. So it's possible that NGOs and civil society organizations may pave the way in changing gender norms around dowries and in providing ways to manage risk. So there are some interventions, for example, which would deposit money in girls' bank account or give them scholarships conditional on their not getting married, say, until they finish school or until age 18. So there are these various experiments which are still in the process of being evaluated. I think the POP Council has found that the secondary education stipend has delayed marriage age. So these are things which need to be watched, and I think Bangladesh is actually a really interesting country to continue studying in terms of what it does in helping the poor move out of poverty and stay out of poverty. Thank you. I'm going to set...